Okay, so someone brought up a nice topic on how can we disengage from daily concerns in a skillful way when meditating. So naturally, with your personal experience, that all of us, I mean, even with the monks as well, when you're doing community stuff, this and that, but especially for you guys who are very, very busy and you have work and family and all sorts of things that you have to deal with. And what happens is, with your personal experience, that whatever you experience is going to be committed to memory, and then essentially that is going to play back to you at some point, especially when you go to practice, you know, the morning's events or the day's events. So, you know, when you sit at the end of the day, then you've got to process all the stuff that you went through from early morning or even several days ago. So, you know, there's a vast storehouse of memories that we have over the years, and how do we how can we sort of temporarily release this stuff and sort of place it down while we're actually practicing and just trying to get some peace and trying to get some insight? So essentially, when you have all these different thoughts and feelings come up, and it's like a record player, that your memories, your past experience keep resurfacing again and again and again, and you think to yourself, like, I don't need to think about this, you know, for whatever the 20th, 30th time, you know, this day. So what actually, you know, what is it that keeps, you know, the person can understand intellectually, I don't need to keep thinking about this over and over and over, but why can't we just drop it instantly, or why can't we drop it in the space of 5 minutes? So when you look at your emotional makeup, it's your feelings which are driving your memories and your thought processes, because as I mentioned previously, if you were emotionally very, very cool, you could basically just let go of all this material very, very quickly, because all your memories and all your thoughts, all the ideas and the views and everything you have, your feelings and your emotions are the energy, are the driving force which propagates and keeps these things like spinning in the mind. So, you know, if you're an individual, it's a bit of a catch-22, because you can be an individual who might be very cerebral and a little bit, it's a bit of a paradox, a bit like, say, emotionally cool. When they're relating with other people, they can be quite emotionally cool, but the mind is still very, very active. So when they're engaging people, they're not particularly emotional, but they still struggle with meditation, because they're too intelligent, they're too smart, and they just instead of being attached to, say, like general human emotions, human experience that we all go through, they're attached to concepts and ideas and views and opinions and it could be anything, like writing books, scholarly stuff. It's still a refined type of feeling. So whether it's feelings like it could be anything, it could be, say, with family life, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, one's pets, it could be hobbies, interests, anything that you experience on a mainstream level. But then you get things like philosophical thought and religious principles and it could be cultural dogma and all this kind of stuff. So all these different views and perceptions, that it's still emotionally driven, but it's more based in mentality. It's like the thinking, contemplating, investigating kind of mind. But it's still driven by sort of more subtle feelings. So how do we calm ourselves down? How do we sort of cool the mind off, where we have an ability to abandon and temporarily let go of stuff, you know, while we're practicing, or even in daily life? Because you know, usually people need, at least most people need 30 minutes, you know, especially with a busy lay life, most people need 30 minutes before they really start to see some real peace of mind. And an hour, like an hour, is pretty solid. Not everyone has an hour every day when you look at exactly what you've got on your plate especially during the working week and shopping and all the rest of it. So, but essentially, the bottom line is the skills that you need, you have skills that you develop with samadhi practice to develop, say, peaceful states of mind, tranquility, and then you have the skill set for contemplation, for insight, for reflection. So essentially, even though samadhi is much more is more simplistic, you're not thinking so much, you're not actively investigating, you know, you're just developing mindfulness. Say concentration is not the right word, it's more like sort of like the sense of calming the mind, mental relaxation. So samadhi practice intellectually is much easier to understand, and much easier to to generate to a degree. But insight is the key. So samadhi, where you focus your attention, you focus awareness, not so much concentration. Concentration is not really the right term, but we're developing stillness of mind, retraining of attention. Those principles are not that difficult to understand, but it still is quite difficult to do. So people can be, I've known people who've been meditating for at least 10 years and they are still not satisfied with their meditation practice. And it's not so much, like a particular person I can think of is very, very intelligent. But unfortunately, it's with a situation like that, no matter what person you're looking at, the wisdom practice will always have more oomph and will always have more ability to get you calm and to get you wise and to sustain the ability to sustain mindfulness like right through your day. So how do we do this? You can have basic tools for samadhi practice, to develop peace of mind, but it's got a workable limit. It'll only take you so far, and then something will come up, and then you're going to have to deal with it. You're going to have to work with it and comprehend it, because essentially it's not going to go away. If you don't address it, it's going to be with you for easily 12 months, 5 years, 10 years. I mean, I've even seen senior monks with stuff after 20 to 30 years, and you just can't drop this. You can't drop these experiences instantly. It could take like 20 years. So, for example, if you had a very, very heavy childhood of possibly say like neglect, poor treatment, the parents, mum and dad were just really, they just didn't do their job. Completely unsatisfactory as parenting models, and you could say start to do meditation retreats. You may have an interest in, it could even be Goenka or Buddhism or Hinduism. It could be anything whatsoever, but when you go to meditate and then you start to see exactly what you're made of, all the for example, all the good aspects of your personality, the not so pleasant, everything that you can possibly think of within the shades of, say, like light and grey and sort of dark sides to the personality which everyone has. Except people at the enlightenment stages, they don't. They're in a different category and at a different level. They're not like. Any person at the first level of enlightenment is not like mainstream people at all. And when you know them and you know them over time, you will see quite clearly, especially when you know what to look for, you will see that person is well outside the normal range, because the behavior is consistently wholesome. The characteristics are very quite, say, like highfalutin, very refined, very high-minded, altruistic. Just very, very giving, continuously with high energy level, very good meditation, wisdom in daily life. Their faculties are very highly developed and very, very clear. But this business with insight, getting back with the insight practice, that insight is not necessarily a difficult thing to actually generate, to understand and generate and develop. Both samatha and vipassana, you know, you can be, like even a young teenage person can develop the skills on both sides to develop good practice over time. Could be 1 year, could be 2 or 3 years. But essentially, with the wisdom practice, you've got to develop modes, ways and means of investigation. So it's not like, say for example, if I have a feeling I'd say like irritation, somebody's behavior like really, really annoys me. And so I think to myself, this is the from the monk's perspective, you know, this, when I contact this person, they start to annoy me. So, you know, so what is it exactly? So, you know, you can look at the you know, that feeling within itself. How does it affect me emotionally? How does it affect my physical body? Because our mind and body is connected. And, you know, what is it about that person that I really, like dislike? You know, why is it irritating? You can go back into, like, deeper and deeper and deeper principles. So don't look at it on the surface level. I mean, really get into it. And think to yourself, you know, this person's annoying me for some purpose. So you look at the, you know, the reasons why, and, you know, like time and place, and it could be anything, the person's tone of voice, you know, their arrogance. It could be a proud, arrogant person. You know, they, you know, you may feel that they, you know, it could be things like, there could be different elements. Person could be arrogant, domineering, rude, intrusive. You could think of half a dozen things. So you're looking at you know, like, I feel, you know, this person really annoys me. But, you know, there could be half a dozen at least underlying principles connected with that experience. So you can't leave any stone unturned. You have to, when you explore these things, you need to understand them from, say, like a full perspective. And you will see. So as you watch your mind experience, especially how you feel, because this is where the key is, one's emotional makeup. So as you explore this and you try to understand this and you try to analyze it from different angles, a full 360 degree perspective, you don't leave anything, any stone unturned, or any sort of any corner don't allow to be hidden from you. You need to explore it as broadly as you can, and as deeply as you can, until you exhaust the contemplations. There's nothing else you can reflect on. You've exhausted the contemplation, and then at that point in time, you know, you've taken it as far as you can, and then very likely, it's quite possible that feeling may come up again. I mean, you know, even the monks, I mean, in community, you know, the monks can annoy each other on a daily basis, no problem at all. We've got people with very, very, very strong personalities and willpower, and you know, they're not afraid to get in your face and give you their views and opinions. And we've got a lot of very smart young guys in the monastery as well, and they'll just tell you exactly what they think, you know. So you know, it's not just the emotional stuff, but you can be sort of in sort of very like mild intellectual combat, say with smart Alex or people who know a lot in areas. You know, it could be things like say horticulture, you know, plant like and herbal medicine. You know, we've got monks who have an incredible not knowledge base in certain areas like computing, like dealing with like smartphones and tablets. Our monks won't run SIM cards inside the monastery. That's a rule that we will probably maintain for a very, very long time. Cause, you know, all of you are well aware of the busyness and the information overload with you know, say tablets and phones with internet access. So you know, you have a situation where you have people with different skill sets. You know, you're not going to come across anyone who knows every, you know, who is just an absolute what would you call it, as an just incredible knowledge base of almost anything you can think of. You know, most of our people have skills in very specific areas, but it can be quite useful for community life. So, but when you look at the way people affect you, you have to examine it very, very thoroughly. And you know, that process over time, you sharpen your skill sets over 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. You could have something rolling with the guy next to you for easily like several years or even maybe even more. So, but the thing is as well that it's not necessarily that person is to blame. We may want to point the finger and say, oh, you know, this person and that person and whatnot, and you know their particular behavior and the things that they do and the things that they say. It's not that individual is intentionally trying to antagonize you, but they bring up certain feelings and certain behaviors within you that you're going to have to deal with. And all of you who are daily meditators are going to feel your emotional experience much more intensely than the average person who's walking the street, because you know meditation makes you more sensitive, intuitive, makes you more aware. But essentially, it's your emotions which are teaching you. And if you didn't have this stuff to work with and affect you, you're really not going to learn very much at all. So when we have the Buddhist teaching, we have the Four Noble Truths. But the way our monks teach, we always tend to orientate towards, say, happiness, joy, positivity, and quality of life, because the vast majority of the population, they really don't want to be focused on suffering and pain and unhappiness and the misery of life. Because I mean, why would you want to be out there? You know, if you vast majority of you need to work for a living, and if life was an absolute misery, I mean, you probably wouldn't want to be out there. You might be better off maybe joining some kind of community, a spiritual community where you can practice higher principles, you can do your meditation, live community life, you know, this kind of thing. You know, you may have possibly a better quality lifestyle, but as you know, the human experience is one of both happiness and say pain or suffering or sorrow to a degree. But the vast majority, you know, but the whole thing with advertising, with the internet, this and that, it's orientated towards, you know, towards feeling good, towards good experiences, and enjoying one's life. And you know, even for myself, you know, even with the monks, you know, we like to have a bit of fun and joke around and have a good time. And otherwise, you know, especially the monk's life can get a little bit boring and a little bit flat. So it's actually good to have a sense of humour. It's good to be positive and joke and tease people and have a little bit of fun, because it just makes life more enjoyable. I mean, all of us have to live together, so we might as well have a good time while we're doing it. But it's exactly the same for people in general society. You know, you want quality of life, you want to enjoy your life, you want your friends, and you know, you may want to travel, your hobbies and interests and all the things that you like to do, but you're still interested in meditation or spiritual practice. And it's something that you can certainly combine. It's just a matter of the skills, bringing the skills together in a way which works for you on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, getting back to that core principle, like disengaging from daily concerns in a skillful way, the bottom line is that with your wisdom practice, your insight practice, you train yourself in a way to explore and understand things from different angles and perspectives, from an emotional perspective or an intellectual perspective or a social conditioning perspective, or you know, things like you've got, say, you're dealing with a person who's got childhood issues, or it could be absolutely anything whatsoever. So there's it's like that author Edward de Bono, you know, who had all these different modes of investigation and developing insight. I mean, he was probably quite intellectually, I would say almost brilliant in a way. I've only had a scan at a couple of his books, but there was a guy who promoted an ability to think and investigate in different ways from different perspectives. But essentially, it's wisdom which is going to release, say, the excessive thinking and the problems and difficulty in life, and you actually have to test it for yourself. So if you look at yourself on an emotional level, because that's where you essentially that's where you need to focus in order to get results and come to an understanding of one's own nature. And you need to see if certain practices actually, certain modes of investigation work for you. So as you contemplate, just watch how you feel emotionally. If you see the mind get peaceful, get tranquil, then you can see fairly clearly that what you're doing is actually working for you. But you usually find with insight practice, no matter which way you investigate, you'll find that the vast majority of any kind of Vipassana based techniques, they will get quite reasonable results, but some better than others. It could even little things like as you're thinking, you can do like a thinking meditation where you can label. It's like a Burmese Vipassana style technique where you label, you label feelings and thoughts and ideas and people and places and times and locations, within one's own mind. So every couple of seconds, if you've got a certain thought which comes up in the mind, a certain idea, an attitude, you label it just very, very briefly. Then every couple of seconds, and then you label some other phenomena which comes up. And then what happens over time is you start to see the patterns. You start to see how thoughts and memories connect with each other. You start to see the emotions which are linked with your personal experience. So people can do this right even at the beginning of the meditation, where if the mind was incredibly busy and just won't stop, well, you use the thinking process as a mode of contemplation. The thinking process becomes an object of mindfulness. And you do this very mild investigation, this labouring process, but it will still make your mind peaceful because you're getting an understanding of exactly how your mind works. And you start to see cause and effect. If I was moving in this particular direction, this is what happened. Or I have certain emotions, feelings with certain people, the people that you get along with, and then people that you dislike. Or you can't see eye to eye. So the people who can't necessarily, it's just like a skillful means. It's a combination of both, say, mindfulness training and this very sort of mild insight. When I was over on the East Coast, I went to see Longpo Panya, who's doing very well, Panya Wado from Bodhi Tree Monastery. He's doing, he's like 80 years of age, but he's still going strong. He's doing very well on his property there. But he's been focused on Burmese Satipatthana Vipassana meditation for at least, he's 80 now, at least 40 plus years, at least, say 40, 45. And he's, he must see the value, and he must have got good results over time, otherwise he wouldn't maintain this for such a long period of time. So you have contradictions, but I don't argue and dispute with people. I don't need to. So the Buddha made it very, very clear that you need samadhi as a basis, at least say upachara samadhi as a basis to develop really deep wisdom, the wisdom which will actually get you to the enlightenment stages. Longpo Panya does the Burmese Satipatthana style, where you constantly label and identify thoughts and feelings, ideas, opinions, views, anything that comes up within the mind experience, you label and identify, make it very, very clear. And over time, one gets much more very sharp and very fast with this ability. So you've got this capability to watch and track the mind. And as soon as you get fleeting thoughts, you get a thought just come out of nowhere in the space of 3 seconds, you're there and you're present. So people, and this is very, very useful for older people whose memories are might be a little bit weak, or their faculties are starting to fade, you can increase your mind power, you can increase your memory power, and you can increase your memory recollection and your awareness of thought processes, of thinking. You know, I've noticed myself that I at times, for example, when I was meditating, say like the early morning, I would deliberately do that style of practice to get my mind activated, because I, for myself, if I get over tranquilized, I mean, I can barely think and remember if I'm sitting for like at least an hour, 1.5 hours early morning. And so this is a way for, say for example, people in daily life, in working life, where you've got to be sharp and aware, and you've got, you know, especially with working life these days, people have to perform and they have to protect their jobs, because, you know, people can easily get the flick, they can lose their jobs, and they've got problems with their mortgage, their house, all this kind of stuff. So that is a way of getting the mind working and activated and getting it thinking, it's like practicing memory and identifying, like, say, like thought processes, because, you know, all of you are well aware that, you know, especially in day-to-day experience, you have to make decisions, you have to think, you have to plan, all this kind of stuff. So you're using your mind on a cerebral level. And so for some people, but it all depends on the individual. I know a gentleman who was an engineer, and he was a structural engineer. He would sit for 2 hours, if he could, early morning before he went to work for the Brisbane City Council. And two hours is quite substantial. And I asked him, you know, did it slow you down when you were at work? And he said, it actually made my mind very, very, very quiet. But it also sharpened my alertness. So even though my mind was fairly quiet, he said, because of the increased mental energy, I was still sharp enough and fast enough to basically stay on top of the job, because he's working on a team, and essentially, you know, you're making decisions constantly throughout the day. And so some people may find that they get impaired by the meditation, but there is a way of actually activating, getting the mind working and moving and thinking. But what else could you possibly do? And something I would always recommend for people as well is that one mantra per minute. And the reason being that you can do it anytime, anywhere. You can basically function and work at full speed. You know, you can be a policeman, you can be a lawyer, you know, you could be, say, like a specialist in a hospital, but your intellectual function won't get impaired, but you'll still develop this background over time. For people who are very cerebral, it might take a couple of days to kick in. For myself, I mean, I could easily see it in the space of 30 minutes. But for people whose minds are incredibly busy, that easily within 2 or 3 days you'd see it. So you do just that, those very simple mantras, you know, say thinking is changeable, or consciousness, perception, whatever, you know, you can think, it could be biological processes, could be quantum physics, anything that which is important to you. Just one mantra per minute, just very, very quickly, every 60 seconds, all your waking hours, as I mentioned previously. But that has an ability to tranquilize the mind and get you peaceful, but you can just do it all the time. And as soon as you notice things, because it will make you sharp, it will make you more intelligent, and it will increase your brain speed, because you're sharpening your faculties at a very shallow level. You're not getting over tranquilized. You're not getting where the meditation's so strong or too deep where you can't even function. You can't even think. You know, I've had situations where I've walked into situations like scenarios, and it's like you're lost. You just lose all your sensory awareness, and you just really don't know what's going on or exactly what you should be doing, because the mind's too quiet. Your thought process is like half, you know, three quarters suspended. You can't even think. You can barely remember. So that you want a situation where informally, when you're not sitting and walking in a formal manner on a day-to-day basis, but you're still interested in practice and you're still interested in developing insights. So that's a very, very easy technique to work with, and you definitely will get peaceful over time with that particular approach. And you develop your insight in that space. Now, in that space between the mantra, as soon as you see, notice a new feeling, a new thought, an attitude, maybe it could be memories, it could be flashback, you get a series of memories which are important to, then you reflect on that to the best of your ability. So like Bhante Gunaratana in Washington State, who is a long-term meditation retreat teacher, he's been a monk for about 60 odd years, so he must have been teaching retreats at least 40, traveling the world. There's probably no country he hasn't been in the world. And but he's got some very, very high powered disciples over time. He's got people who are CEOs, who are corporate executives, they're business managers, they're corporate lawyers. And these people, they need to be sharp and aware, and they need to be on the ball and know what they're doing. But what he gets them to do is just to meditate for 60 seconds. So maybe before lunch, or at any time of the day, even several times a day, three or four or five times a day. If everyone's got a minute to spare at some point in the day, so you just sit quietly and just watch your breathing. You don't have to do anything incredible. You don't have to try to get peaceful or attain anything. It's a very, very short, short little snippet, like a baby meditation. But even focused samadhi, focused awareness for 60 seconds still has the potential, there's enough mind power there to develop insight. And and when you do that several times a day, you're developing your mindfulness training, your intuitive awareness, and when things come up, you have the potential to develop your insight as well. So, let me think. And just to finish off, I don't want to rabble on too long. Daily concerns. Ask yourself, why are you so concerned about your experience? Why are these feelings so important to you, and why do they affect you the way they do, and why do you think it's so important? Some people can have scenarios in their mind that they would just love to abandon, but they just can't let things go. Or at the opposite scale, there's something that they it's incredibly important to you. It may be crucial to your very life. Very, very key issues, this and that. But you don't want this stuff. You don't want to think about this stuff when you're trying to sit and walk. But the bottom line, is what you've got to question and question and question, and until that experience stops. That means if that experience doesn't stop, it means that you haven't been able to understand it completely. Once you understand an experience comprehensively in full detail, 100%, you can just drop it like that without difficulty, and that will be the test of your insight practice. So we'll finish up. And so we've got lunch at 11. We've got another sitting and walking. What we'll do with this particular sitting meditation, you choose if you want to sit and walk. We'll do the love meditation. And this is similar to the beautiful breath. It's a matter of looking at the breath in a way which generates these positive, fuzzy, say cuddly emotions. So what I want you to do is to focus on the breathing in that part of the body which is comfortable for you, either around the mouth, nose tip, in the chest or the tummy area. And I want you just in a very, very, just a very mild, gentle way, just radiate a loving feeling towards the breath. All of you love your boyfriends and girlfriends to a degree, your sons and daughters, maybe your best friend, you know, the best friend you've ever got in life. You've all got a potential to generate that feeling in different scenarios. So just in a very, very mild way, just for 5 minutes, generate a feeling of love towards the breath. So as you develop the love meditation, just relax your physical body, soften your belly, and just allow the energy to flow from your, so around the belly button area, the tantian, the chi point, allow the energy to flow up the spine towards your mind. feel a little bit tired or sleepy, just make sure you take full deep breaths right into the belly section. So as you generate that feeling of love towards the breath, just try to focus on that feeling, and you'll find that it actually makes that feeling increase in strength. For some people who find the breathing meditation maybe a little bit difficult, you can just focus on, say, like a feeling, maybe the feeling of the foot on the floor or your hands in the lap. So if you find the Anapanasati, the breathing meditation, is a bit too tricky, the perceptions on the breath not so easy, you can just focus on a part of the body, a feeling, either your bottom on the cushion, your foot on the floor, maybe the hands in the lap, and that can be a focus of stillness for you.